If the river keep rising, water gonna overflow.
What's up, AA name? All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Carson. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club. We're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety. Tell us his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book in Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueShipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, I must have this thing. So I've told a story before, and it's tough. It takes a lot of preparation. This person's doing it on short notice, so that's a big service commitment. She's a good friend of one of mine. My friend is cool, so you would assume she's going to be pretty good today.
I'm Annie, and I'm a grateful, recovering alcoholic and addict. And it's a pleasure to be up here to tell y'all my story. Now, 18 years ago, if somebody would have told me that I'd be going on 19 years, I would be like, oh, yeah, right. Okay, my sobriety date is December 14th, 2003, and it's been a struggle. You know, I have went through death. I have went through everything that you can think about. I did it. Okay, first of all, I want to say that I am grateful that God has spared me to now, because when I was in the streets, I did a lot of things, you know, that I should have been dead for doing. But I won't. God spared me. And I know that He don't make no mistakes, and He spared me for a reason. So, you know, I'm still here, so I'm blessed already. Okay, when I was growing up, I came from the type of family where I was poverty, functional family, as they say. And we were not rich coming up. Matter of fact, I come from a poor family. You know, it's like everybody, all the neighbors in my neighborhood would have everything before we had it. If they had cable, we had an antenna. Now, you know that's back in the day. So, and if they had a washer and dryer, I had a wringer washer and had to hang them out on the line. Now, I don't know if y'all know about that, though. But I had to do that. I didn't have many clothes or shoes. But my daddy tried to provide the best he could. But you see, the thing about my daddy was, he loved my mama, but he also loved the other women, too. So just him driving trucks was not enough for him to support our family and whoever the senior was on the side. So he decided he wanted to get into, I'm just going to say it, some of Granny's Duraquat, which is alcohol. So he said that he wanted to restart bootlegging. I said, okay. I said, this life might be fun. I said, but I ain't going to do that. I said, I'm going to grow up. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to go to college. And I'm going to just let my mom and daddy see how good I did. And I'm going to get them out of this poverty. That's what the math said. But my brain didn't agree. My addiction stepped in. So after that, I said, okay. I made it through elementary school. I got a brother. He's older than me. And he didn't make it through high school because he smoked pot and got caught. And you know, anything you do near the school, you bust it, you do it. Okay? So I said, okay, I'm gonna do better than him. I'm going to at least make it through high school. So I went through elementary school. I made it through high school, you know, and had a little boyfriend and, you know, did all that. And when I finished high school, I said, I'm going to college. That's what I'm going to do. But lo and behold, I didn't know that me going to college was about like going to a juke joint. You know, because when I went to college, that's all I did. Now, I said, now, I thought I was lucky because I was talking to the cancer son. I said, I got it made now. I can party all I want in here. Do all of my work for me. But you see, he wasn't the brightest bulb on the tree. We had to write a paper, and he gonna write the same thing and give it to the teacher, except changing a couple of words. Now, how bright is that? And then she gonna say, I see that y'all got the same paper, you know. I said, no, we don't. But we did. And I said, man, why did you do that? But I had him to do it because I wanted to drink, you know. And that's all I did in college. You know, I did go to some classes, and I did behave myself a couple of times. But there was three of us that was like the three students, me and this girl named Coco and this girl named Sharon. Man, we used to go to the boys' dorm every night. Every night we was over there. Drunk as three coons, but we was over there, okay? And we took this girl one time, and we hung her out the window on her feet like that. And she was like, no. And so we were just messing with her, you know. So then, when we did that, we used to come in about 3 or 4 in the morning to the dorm. And this old lady was, I hated to say it, but this old lady was running the dorm at that time. And she said, y'all need to come in either that day or come in earlier. Because I'm getting tired of getting up every day, every night, letting y'all in before day. So you got to come in earlier. He said, okay, we'll do it. So we had this other dorm lady named Miss Pierce. We couldn't stand her. So we'd stay out on purpose just to permit her, you know. So as time went on, you know, I had some more couple of guys in college and whatever. So time went on, and then when I didn't finish college, of course. You know, I wanted to, but I didn't. I said, because I had got a loan, and when the loan ran out, I used that as an excuse not to finish college. I said, okay, I'm going to get out, and I'm going to go home and get a good job, and, you know, and I'm going to do what I needed to do. But come to find out, lo and behold, when I went home, I didn't do none of that. I stepped into the ring of fire. You know, like I said, my daddy was bootlegging, and he used to sit me on his knee and give me sips of beer, and I'd be like, you know, daddy, that's good. But he didn't know then I was an alcoholic and addict before I ever picked up the dope and alcohol. And he didn't know at that time that he was creating a monster, you know. And for a long time, I said, I wonder who I took my alcoholism out, because my mama didn't drink at all. And then when I got sober, I'm like, okay, I took it out of my daddy. Because, see, I thought what we did at our house was normal for a while. But as I began to get sober, I'm like, wait a minute, something ain't right here. You know, so time went on, and I said, well, all right, I'm leaving now. I'm going on my way. All right, unfortunately, that didn't work. I had to come back home again. But this time when we came back home, I said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm gonna sell me some goat. That's what I'm gonna do. Get me some money. Yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. And my daddy was drinking. I mean, selling alcohol. And so it was like a one stop drop. Y'all ever heard of that? One stop drop. Okay. So at the one stop drop, you know what? I ain't got to explain that. So I called myself. Okay. I made me a little trailer down at the back of my mom's house, run the power from the house, you know, I had it going on. Da 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 da. And then all of a sudden, that monster turned it twisted. You know. I had it made for a while. Like I could smoke every day and but I wasn't really a drinker at the time, because at first I didn't know that alcohol was a drug. And that was one of my excuses that I had to stay out there and drink. But now I can tell you this right here. When I lost my kid, I didn't stop. When I was homeless and had to take a bath outside and with a hose, I didn't stop. Okay, and another thing is I almost got raped, but I still didn't stop because I hadn't hit a bottom. Okay, and now what really upset me was I didn't have nowhere to go, and when it rained, I'm going to tell you what, I was about this close to telling that dog, you got to get out of the house. I got to have somewhere to go for rain. Because he was living better than me. I said, why in the world is going on here? You know, so I had to live in a car. No matter how cold it was, 20 degrees, 30 degrees, I had to live in a car. And luckily, somebody put a bunch of clothes in there and some covers. And so I wasn't warm, but you do what you have to do to stay alive. You know, when I run the streets, I did everything I had to do to stay alive. You know, I mean, but I still had some yets. And one of my yets were selling myself. So I got smart and said, well, I'm going to sell and let other people sell themselves. You know, so that's what happened. So time went on, and after all that, you know, the man that I was working for, me and him used to have big fights, you know. And he abused me very bad physically, but I still didn't stop, you know. I said, well, this stuff is so good, I can't stop. I got to keep going. So after a period of time, we would argue, you know. And so one day, he hit me a couple of times real hard. So one day I was sitting around, you know, and something said, we got in a big argument. And then this time something said, Andy, do you want to keep getting this abuse, or do you want to do something different? I said, well, this stuff is good, but I guess I got to stop. So okay, I'm going to do something different. So I went to a phone, and now I'm going to tell you how God works. I called four or five people numbers that I had on the phone. Nobody answered. Now, one time out of my whole life, my sponsor that I had that time, she never answered the phone. I said, I ain't going to call my sponsor. She ain't going to answer the phone. And I'd be damn, I called her and she answered the phone. And she wouldn't answer the phone before. Obviously, God must have told her that I need help. So she said, what's wrong, Annie? I said, I'm tired. I'm ready to stop. She said, okay, I'm going to pick you up. We got this place down there in North Carolina called a Sandpiper. It's like a big buffet. So she said, I'm going to take you to the Sandpiper, and then I'm going to take you to a meeting. I said, okay. So I went to the Sandpiper, you know, got my belly full, and I said, well, I'm ready to go now. I'm ready to go back. So after the meeting, I said, I'm just going to clean myself up, you know, and then I'm going to go. After the meeting, I said, I'm good now. I want to go back to the Murph. And now, my sponsor was going to give me the leeway to go, and then this other lady said, don't do that. Send her treatment. So I ended up going to treatment with just the clothes on my back. That was it. And so when I went in treatment, you know, and the doctor examined me, he said, Miss Hobbs, you are lucky you came in when you did, because your body was getting ready to shut down from malnutrition. Because I smoked and I didn't do nothing else. Just smoke. And it took a toll on my body. So they had to give me all kind of stuff to get me, because I weighed 135 pounds with two bricks in my pocket. So I was small. And you imagine me weighing 135 pounds? Okay. So, but I don't weigh that down, though. But anyway, they put me in treatment, and they said, okay. I said, I don't want to go back to where I come from, because there's nothing there but drugs and alcohol. So they said, go to Atlanta. They got jobs and they got all, you can get jobs and places to stay and all that. I said, okay, sounds like it might be a good place. So when I came, they took me to the Peachford House. I don't know if it's still around or not. But the Peachford House, they took me in and they had me, they said, you got to get a job at a certain time. I said, okay. And people said, okay, now you know, and when you fill out an application, you got to be honest and let them know you got a felony. I said, look, I'm a habitual felon. I'm not going to put that on no application. So I just said, well, I'm a felon, okay? So I didn't get no job at all. No job. And I said, my goodness. I said, I'm not doing that. I said, I'm honest, but I ain't going to be that honest. I can't. So I started just filling out regular applications and saying, no, I ain't got no feeling. You know, and after I started doing that, you know, I couldn't get a post office job. I couldn't get a security job. But I did get a job. So I was like, okay. So I guess then was when I had to start being honest. So after that, I went to this program called Southern Women's Housing Alliance. That's when I was getting myself together, got a job and everything. And I stayed there for about 2.5 years. And lo and behold, before I got there, I was homeless here at Napa. And I said, damn, if I'm going to be homeless, I might as well be homeless here and go to the meetings. So I was like, who's all these people? They got all these nice cars, wearing all these nice clothes. I said, Lord, have mercy. I wonder what they do for a living. I said, they might do what I did for a living. That's what it is. But come to find out that it was this program. So I began to, I said, I ain't going to tell my story to nobody been through what I've been through. And you know, I began to listen to other people's story and hearing people share. And I said, damn, they some people that had it worse than me. So why should I be ashamed? So time went on. So this is when I got and went to the Alliance, Housing Alliance. And the lady said, are you sober? I said, yes, ma'am. You know, because I didn't want to spend no more time under close to the bridge here. I said, I'm done with that. I got to do something. But I'm going to say something, and I'm going to make this short. This guy that used to come here, and I'm going to tell his name. His name was Rob. And he was a dirty old man. But at the time, I didn't know it. So he says, I can help you. I'll take you to my house. And remember now, at this time, I didn't have no car, no way of getting nowhere. I didn't have nothing. So I go to his house, and he puts me down in the basement. And I'm like, where's the door? There was no door to the bathroom. So what you think? I said, he's trying to catch me taking a shower. I said, but he'll never do it because I time him every morning when I knew he was going to come. And I time him every night when I knew he was going to leave. So but then I said, I ain't got to worry about it. And then time went on with him and he did other things and tried to do other things, but I said, no, man, I'm not like that. I said, I want to get this program almost over, and I want to move on, you know, because I am not a one-white chipper. I'll let you know that. I had more than one white chip, you know. And so that's when I came back up here, and I got in that program. They said, have you used or anything? I said, no, ma'am, I'm sober. Because I've been calling all weekend. They said, look at that girl that's calling again. I said, well, okay. She says, well, if you're sober, then I'm going to take you in. So I went down there and I took a drug test. And, you know, like I said, I lived there for 2.5 years, which that's when I was met my mate that wouldn't give me the time of day because I was homeless, which I could understand that, but that changed over a period of time. So, let me start. So I began to, you know, it's, everybody cannot get sober and get in a relationship. I don't advise it if you're new, because sometimes it don't work. But luckily, God put her in my life, and she had a lot of time. And so she helped, between her and God and y'all, that helped me accumulate my time, you know. After leaving this program, I started staying with her. I started kept coming to these meetings. I'm like, okay, you know, this ain't bad, you know. And so I stuck and stayed. You know, they used to say, keep coming back. If you don't get nothing the first time, you don't get nothing the second time. What I used to do is I would listen to people share or tell their story. And if there was something that I could use, I took it with me. And what I couldn't use, I left it here. That's how I do. I don't know about nobody else, but that's how I do. Because I can't function if I don't take something that I need to help me function. You know, and I have been in meetings, and I have heard newcomers share and hit me right on the money. So you never know who's going to help you in these rooms. No matter what I went through or what happened, I had help in these rooms. And and then they said, you got to get a sponsor. I said, a sponsor? I said, what is that? You know, of course I was thinking all kind of stuff. Because at first I was like, okay, you know, maybe that's something affiliated with like a pastor or something like that, you know, because I didn't know. This a noble sponsor, somebody that you tell your innermost secrets to, but you don't want to tell that in public. I said, okay, I did that. So I did that. And then they were talking about working some steps. I'm like, working some steps. You know, it was like, yeah, that's basically what you have to do to stay sober, get your sponsor and work the steps. And I said, well, there may be some of these steps that I don't want to work, especially the fourth step. You know, I didn't want to say you had to make a list, you know, and I was like, well, I don't have to make a list because I didn't do nothing wrong. They did it all to me because I always played the blame game. You know, Tom and Harry did this, not me. So they was like, well, you ain't got no character defect. I said, no, I'm good, man, I'm good. And she was like, well, that's not how it works. You're going to have to work every step. You know, and I heard that, you know, I heard one time it says, I can't, he can, and I'm going to let him. That's how I look at the first three steps, you know, because the only time that I had a God when I was in the streets and I was saying, Lord, please give me some more. I want one more and I'll stop. I don't know, none of y'all didn't do that, I don't think. But I said, Lord, please, I'll stop after this. I'll stop after this. I promise you. I'll go to church. I won't do nothing else. Okay. That didn't happen. Of course, I went back on my word. Okay, that's how I used my God then. But I didn't know that people in here loved me before I loved myself. And so I was like, okay, that's it. Can't give me no more, then I'm just going to, I said, I'll stop on my own. That didn't work. I couldn't stop on my own because I was addicted. I could not stop. I tried everything there was to stop. But until I really, really hit that bottom, that's when I stopped. And that's when I went to that rehab, and he told me about my body situation. You know, and I'm suffering now from my old behavior. They say that you suffer consequences for your actions. You know, I'm suffering consequences for my actions, but I am alive. So that's what I can say. You know, because I've been through a lot. You know, I'm a little sick, but, you know, God spared me, you know, for a reason. But anyway, just to make a long story short, like I said, I got in these rooms, and I did what I was told. I became willing to do what needed to be done. And that's what kept me sober. But I had to get in my head first that alcohol is a drug. Because I didn't assume alcohol was a drug. I said, it's liquid. I can't do nothing for you. But that's what I was wrong at. You know. And I had to go through a lot of stuff, you know. I mean, when I stole cars, that wasn't my bottom. You know. When I was breaking in people's houses, that wasn't my bottom. And I mean, I was breaking your house when you knew when you were gone. I'd break in and use your house till you got back. Then I'd go. And then you'd see me with your stuff on the next week. You know? And I'm banned from Walmart because I used to take everything they had. You know? I did some stuff. Now, that stuff will make you do strange things. But anyway, I learned that I don't have to do that today. I don't have to steal nothing. I don't have to, I can bar and plead, but I don't have to steal it, you know. And so that's one thing that I'm glad of. My whole outlook upon life has changed since I came in these rooms. And if you knew, stick and stay because it works. It works. You just have to work it. You can't come in here and just sit and not do nothing because it's not going to come by osmosis. You got to put in here what you put in when you was in the streets. When you was at the bar drinking, you put everything in it that you could. Because when I was using, I did everything, put everything just in it so I could get another one. But now I twisted that around and bring it in here. And now I'm putting everything I had into this program. So, basically, After I got my sponsor and worked steps, you know, back then they had this thing called ABCs. That's been long. We're going way back in time, which was ashtrays, brooms, and chairs. So they would have you, you had to do that for about 30 days, and they would really see how where you was at in your program, because a lot of people wouldn't do ABCs, you know, because I didn't want to do it. Then somebody said, you know, sometimes you have to do what you don't want to do. And I said, I understand. So I started doing the ashtray and brooms and chairs, and then I started, as time went on and I got more time, you know, I started, you know, working with my sponsor, doing the steps, and it just, and you know, there's one thing I can say. God loved me before I loved myself, and so did y'all. When I came here, y'all already had loved me. Y'all opened me with open arms. So it don't matter your color, your age, nothing. These rooms will always give you open arms. No matter what situation you've been in, no matter what your problem is. These rooms and the higher power, whoever you choose to call your higher power, will help you. So if you have nowhere to go, they always told me, what would you do if there was a temptation and nobody was around? What would you do? Would you call on your higher power? Or would you do what you're not supposed to do? And also they tell me that that the thought of using only lasts a certain amount of seconds. And during that time when that happened to me, I would think of me being somewhere I couldn't pay for, like on the beach or somewhere like that. And it passed. You know. So I advise you, if you get a craving to use or whatever, think about something nice or somebody you love or just anything. And before you know it, the urge will be gone. And you'll be okay. But like I said, just keep coming back. And if you keep coming back, there's no reason that you can't make it in this program. But like I said, you have to put in it, just like you did out there, in order to get it. And I think that about rounds it up. And thank y'all for listening.
If the river keep a rising, water gonna overflow. If that river keep a rising, flood water gonna overflow. Just like that old river, baby, it's my time to go. Banks gotta overrun, everything torn apart. The banks gonna overrun. Everything's torn apart. come.